We only do this for therapy for the most part.
Yeah. Help get through COVID a little bit, I thought.
Really?
Yeah, it was because I found it was the most natural way to talk as
into
a group.
These big-ass microphones right in the middle of your face. It's really natural for you.
Everyone, it's, oh God, suck at this part.
It's good. It's like, you know, it's only been 20 times.
I know, and I was doing better. The last few episodes, I got it in one shot.
Yeah, it's true.
For some reason.
Hey, everyone, it's Tableside Mashed Potatoes back. Kirsten Webster here. I'm the guest today, along with Derek and Peter, your regulars. It's not that hard. Like, I don't understand.
That was awesome.
Wow, can you come in and do that every time?
That was awesome. That's well, welcome to the show.
God. Well, why can't you do that?
Yeah, welcome, yeah. Welcome to the show, Peter and Derek. It's great to be here. That was awesome.
You have to do your own. You can't use that.
I'm using that one.
You can't use that.
Yeah, that's 100% being used.
Yeah. So you're taking Scott's spot this week because Scott's still on vacation.
Yeah.
I wish I was still on vacation.
I'm feeling like this would probably be the best, second best episode ever, too. Like, I don't
know. Wow, choose first best. You haven't even heard this one yet. You're already sure it's going to be worse. Wait a second.
Well, it's hard to top. We had four people last time. I think it's, you know, it's hard to top that.
But we do have Kirsten Webster on the show today. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
She's turning red. She's
I don't
nervous.
Feel like I was given a lot of choice in the matter.
Yeah, it's true.
That's what we like in her, I guess.
Yeah, we're running out of cohorts to record our podcast in person. So, yeah.
You work with a lot of not-for-profits.
I do work with a lot of not-for-profits. I kind of fell into that, I don't know, very naturally. Just kind of worked out in the end.
You know how it worked out for you? Is Rob had me managing a project, which I don't do at all. And then I was just like, can I have somebody on here? Like, her? And I just like pointed to anybody. And now you're like our not-for-profit person.
It's really rewarding work for sure. It's very enjoyable. I've got, I think, 6 not-for-profits I'm working with now.
Holy.
I have to do some.
Whoa. Really?
5 of them.
It's NGM. That'd be not-for-profit. Do you find not-for-profit owners easy to work with, super demanding, scattered, stressed?
I think it depends on the organization. Everyone is at a not-for-profit organization, I think, is there because they're passionate about what they're doing and they want to help people, so that automatically makes them a pretty good person.
Mm-hmm.
So they're generally pretty awesome to work with. We tend to get a lot of creative freedom a lot of the time, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Some really cool campaigns. The most challenging part is working within budgets and doing some really super cool and impactful campaigns when maybe we don't have a ton of production dollars or...
Mm-hmm. That's where some of the creativity comes in.
Yeah.
We're trying to stretch campaign dollar.
It definitely
dollar.
Pushes our storytelling team, I think, to think of ways to... And what's the production budget? Nothing.
And I don't want to speak for them, but I think they like that challenged, right?
Well, they've always rose to the occasion. So.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I think being put in a box helps. So this is a weird analogy, but I'm going to say it anyways. Like, when I first started playing video games, it was Commodore 64, which stands for, is it 64 bytes? I think it's 64K. I don't even know.
64 kilobytes?
64 kilobytes.
Whoa.
This was what it stood for. So every game had to be 64 kilobytes or less. And the games were amazing. Like, they were amazing games. Imagine trying to work within that. Now you can have, like, 10 DVDs that you had to install, and it can still be crappy. But you can have, like, the imagination, and I thought they were amazing back then. I still maybe find it playable.
I played Pokemon on my Game Boy. I loved that shit.
Whoa. You play a Game Boy?
I did when I was,
is
like,
is that
12.
The green screen Game Boy?
Yeah, like the very first one, you know, where you like
yeah.
held it like this and the screen was above. Not like the ones that popped up, like the original block.
Yeah.
And then we had a GameCube and it sat in my parents' basement for like 20 years, like so long. And we brought it to the cabin last year just like for fun.
Yeah.
We played old school Mario Kart on that thing for hours when the weather sucked or like it was too cold to ski or something. It was so great.
Mario Kart was the best because you could pick it up. You could be drunk out of your mind and pick it up and play. and still have lots of fun.
So yeah. fun.
There's a lot of games that still hold up, like, you know, GoldenEye, James Bond.
You know what's hilarious is I found this sweet farm game where you could manage your own farm. And
is
I was
that
like,
Crossy Roads?
Nope.
Or Animal Crossing?
Nope.
No,
no, okay. But there is...
There's some kind of farm game. It came with, like, his Xbox package or whatever, and I was like, this is sweet. I got egg clients, and look how much I'm going to learn building my own farm, because, like, still got correct equipment names and, like, correct crop processes and all this stuff.
Really?
So, yeah, so I'm trying to, like, play this, and I'm trying to drive my tractor, and they make you harvest the field, so you have to, like, drive your tractor to harvest your wheat field.
Oh, my God.
My wheat field was in really rough shape.
I don't like games that feel like work. I remember trying the Sims. My daughter plays this all the time, but there's Sims. I remember getting stressed out because I had dirty dishes and they were getting like flies and stuff. And I was like, oh crap, I got to do the dishes.
Oh, I used to love the Sims.
And then I'm like, why am I playing a game where I have to do the dishes? Like, fuck, what's wrong with me?
I know.
Hate dishes in real life.
Yeah, it's like I play video games to step out of reality. That's why I like, I'll play like NFL football and create myself and it'll be like 7'4", 390 pounds, a quarterback.
You do what? Wasn't that
so very realistic?
The Office yeah. where Dwight made his alternate self on, in the game. Remember, and he was still a paper salesman.
What was
salesman.
His name?
But he could fly. Yeah, everything else was identical. Still selling paper.
Oh, I love that show.
Getting back to non for profit.
Oh yeah, nothing. Remember? That work thing we were talking about.
Yeah. Do you find it gets easier though? Like better the more you do? Like
yeah, like I think you just learn more about the industry and. Like, when I go into a brief or something, there's some things you just end up knowing.
Well, you obviously have a sense of, like, where they get their money from and how they raise money and some of their pivotal events. Do we ever kind of influence any of that, or is it mostly coming up with campaigns in between those things or, you know, kind of augmenting?
I think we can provide a lot of support in, like, user experience and how they're receiving donations online and that. More digital experience. There's a lot we can do in that space for everyone. For example, you've got your monthly donation amounts up there. So instead of getting someone to donate once, you want them to donate monthly. Maybe it'll make the options 5, 10, 15, 20. Let's go 5, 10, 25, 50.
Right.
So otherwise you got, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, and then another box. Probably people aren't popping in 50 because they're thinking your expectation is 5, 10, 15, 20.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You start those a little bit higher. Some people are just who are very maybe very generous.
Mm-hmm.
That type of thing. I think there's opportunity, which is really cool to see the results of some of that stuff once we've been able to have an impact there and help some organizations out. Most of it's been campaign based, more than event based.
Well, it's interesting to see how it kind of. Move the needle a little bit. I think a lot of it's been kind of like set and forget for years because they're so busy. They have a million other things to
do.
They
are but so busy.
You could, like, in theory, you know, get into some of the more organic, like, you know, lead nurturing or lead generation stuff that takes just a lot of hours, but not necessarily a lot of money, right? So, you know, someone can sit there and run email campaigns or do social and work on social. It's just a bit of guidance around, hey, this is what you should be doing. This is what you should be testing. Here's how you leverage your networks and your mailing lists, and they usually do have a pretty strong database from what I can tell.
Yeah, and I think it's like taking the time to set up that whole strategy so that it runs on its own. It's a big investment in time and effort at the front end, but it's going to save so many man hours later of not manually sending out those emails or not, you know, all that follow-up that you put in place, that CRM system. Like, it might take some effort to get it set up, but I think it would save some people some time later on and just help them out a lot.
In my experience working with nonprofits on the marketing side of things, I find that we're always marketing for those micro donations, like what you're saying, the $5, $10, $25. Do you think marketing has an effect on the larger donations, like from your philanthropists who are going to be like, here's $2 million? Is that a marketing thing, or is that like a salesperson going? Or is there anything that we can equip salespeople with for them to go and have these meetings with, I don't know, Jane and Joe and say, we know you have donation dollars that
you mean like corporate sponsorship type
corporate sponsorship. That's the name. See? This is why you're on to talk about nonprofits, because you know the lingo.
No, I don't know that, unless you reach the person who gets to make that decision, right? Typically, there's one or two people who are in control of those dollars, and they get to choose where they're putting those. So if you can reach that person and really impact them, then yeah, maybe that could make a huge difference. I think most of those come from relationship building between the organization and the sponsor.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it comes down to telling their story well, right? Like there's usually some reason why you should be donating and they're trying to get it across, but there's so much, it's weird. There's so much competition in these areas too, right?
Competition is just such a poor, like that is the word, but it's such a poor word because there's no nonprofit organization that I've ever come across that doesn't have any business doing what they're doing or helping who they're trying to help. And the people who are there doing it and working there every day are so passionate about it and like they want to make change and this is so important to them and that's why they get up in the morning, that's why they go to work. Everyone that's out there is doing a really great job and helping a lot of great people. I think what will become important and has become important and will continue to be is providing people with other ways to give. So like, you know, as millennials start becoming the target, which right now a lot of campaigns we're doing are trying to reach that audience of people. Or then, like, you know, we're even talking about Gen Z now is how old. I don't want to think about it, but but you know, when you're trying to reach those audiences, they more want to know exactly where their money's going. Well, if I'm giving you $50, what is that $50 doing? So giving people ways to give that have more transparency as to where their money goes, I think is a huge opportunity. Micro giving, like we've talked about this in the past, where there's opportunities to just round up your transactions by, you know, it's $5.97, round it up to $6.
Yeah.
That's an easier way to get that generation to donate their money.
And that's been going on for a long time because I remember, I don't know if it was Sarah McLachlan or something, but there was always a commercial where it was like, for the price it costs to buy yourself a coffee every day, you can feed a starving child. Micro donations is like just been a thing that's been going on forever.
That whole roundup at the till gets me the time because you already got your card out, you've already done your transaction, which is the most painful part.
Yeah.
So they're like, do you want to give $5 to, you know, starving children around the world? It's like, I'm not an animal. Of course I will, right? Like, you kind of have to. Oh.
No, I just spend it all on these chips.
Yeah, sure. Take the Doritos out. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
I need these Doritos.
So nonprofits, they have a lot of stakeholders involved in pretty much every project, whether it's a marketing project or not. They'll have people who aren't even in marketing involved in your marketing project, right? Mm-hmm. So how have you managed that in the past? That's tough. That's really like that's a hard thing for an account manager to manage.
You just have to plan for it. Like when you create a timeline, you're not like everyone wants stuff done right away, right? You have to know that you're not going to get approval a concept presentation in 2 days because it's going to have to go through a lot of people and you're probably going to have to go through a few more rounds of revisions before you make everybody happy. Because this is going to work for a lot more than just the marketing team, right? Like this has got to make sense for everyone. I don't know that I've figured out how to navigate it totally the right way, but I just try to plan for it.
In our previous episode, I know you listened to it with Rob and Ben. We talked about...
Totally listened to that.
Yeah.
We talked about, what you'd learn working client side, and that's empathy. So it's, you know, if one person on the stakeholder board of 25 people doesn't like your idea, it gets shut down. How do you go to, let's say, your creative team and be like, sorry, we can't do this? Oh, I thought when I pitched it in the room, they all liked it. Well, there's one person who wasn't really into it, and now we have to switch it up.
I think I actually have a little bit of client-side empathy since I started managing the ZGM website, and I've been trying to get everyone to write content.
Oh, we laugh. Right?
I would not be adhering to my timelines at all. I think you have to be understanding, like, for the most part, they're doing their best. Like, their job is also to probably get this campaign into market. They're probably accountable to someone else. And for the most part, you can ask some of our storytelling team that They say, yeah, Kirsten, we can see right through the big giant smile of positivity on your face when you're giving us this news that this is going to be... Here's the what do you call it, the compliment sandwich or whatever?
I think it's like, the shit sandwich.
Yeah, the shit sandwich. I think like...
I'll give you an example of a shit sandwich. Podcast is doing great. There's a lot of technical errors, mostly on you, Derek, but overall, you're doing a great job.
You're on the podcast, too. You know that, right? It's a team effort.
Here's another shit sandwich for you, Derek.
Oh, here we go.
Heard the podcast is doing pretty good. We got more than 11 subscribers, which is what I thought I was getting into when I came in here today.
Yeah.
Peter pours a way better drink than you, apparently. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot the bottom bread.
Yeah, you still need to add.
And you look so handsome.
I hate this shit sandwich. I've lost my appetite on this. Sure.
That's gonna be the new ad for this episode, but it's gonna be hard to do.
Yeah. Shit.
just use the poo emoji. Yeah. Everyone loves that.
It'll just be me in between two pieces of bread, apparently.
Do you ever see yourself working for a nonprofit? Like, I find sometimes you go in and you feel like there's so many things you could do to help them out. Like, you could just be like the most valuable person there. Do you ever feel like, oh, I could just go do this?
Honestly, my clients at all the nonprofit organizations I work with have been so awesome. Like, I've never felt like, oh, like, they need all this help. We could do so much with this. I do definitely think there's areas where, oh, if we just could do this. But I'm pretty sure they're thinking the same thing. They just can't get the buy-in or the budget or the whatever to make it happen. I'm not ready to leave agency for a while yet. But, you know, maybe eventually. I don't know.
If there was one...
Do I get to, like, approve this before I...
No. If there was one... If there was one nonprofit company out there right now that you could work with, who would that be?
Coca-Cola.
I mean, I think it'd be cool to work for, like, an organization like Coca-Cola in their department that gets to decide on those like corporate sponsorships and decide like what happens with that money, like organizations that have enough to like, you know, millions of dollars that you get to spend on nonprofit and charitable initiatives. Like, it'd be so cool to have a part of that and like really make an impact.
I agree. I feel like there's lots of companies that don't really have a policy around their corporate giving. Like, a lot of it's just like, hey, whoever's like, they're just picking willy-nilly charities and organizations that, you know, near and dear to their manager's hearts and stuff. But sooner or later, they get sophisticated enough, they come up with an actual, like, corporate giving strategy. And then they're like, okay, you know, like Timbits or something like that. Like, they've got a purpose and everything drives towards that. And I feel like there's this middle ground where that would be the job. You come in and go, okay, look, like, you're not getting any, like, ultimately giving is marketing too, right? Like, I remember talking with Jay, it's like, charity can be marketing if you do it right.
Well,
you
like can get Hawk? Both.
No, totally.
Yeah, Timbits is a great example.
Yeah. Or the Wii Foundation.
I also hate my laugh. I'm going to hate this whole podcast.
Yeah, exactly. All right. All right, Kirsten. Well, on that note, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I know I forced you on, and I really appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
Yeah, and thanks for doing the intro.
That's what we like in our guests, is to begrudgingly get forced into coming on the podcast.
Yeah, I feel like I say that quite often, actually, now that I think of it.
I told Derek a little bit more incentive would have had me in the room for the champagne episode.
Oh, right. Yeah, we really dropped the ball on that.
Sorry. I mean, we did have champagne at 4:30, but you opened it too early.
My champagne.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It was really good.
Better give me, just so you know.
All right, on that note, thank you so much for coming on the show, Kirsten. And I think we get Scott next week again. I can't remember.
Oh, I mean, great. That sounds awesome.
Okay, so wait. Is this still second best?
No, this is like...
it's like one and a half best. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I'm not going to say it's going to go downhill from now because Scott's back. But, you know, if you put, again, you connect the dots on these things, you can decide for yourself.
Yeah, we'll check our reviews. Check our reviews and downloads.
Yeah. I better ask all my friends to go 5-star this, eh?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.